Welcome to Community and University, the MSU Center for Community and Economic Development podcast, aimed at providing outreach to both community members and students throughout the state of Michigan. The Michigan State University, U.S. Economic Development Administration, University Center for Regional Economic Innovation, its mission is to stimulate innovative economic development in the most distressed communities within Michigan. The REI University Center embraces a culture of regional collaboration and knowledge sharing between economic development professionals and committed scholars. The center's model provides responsive community engagement, strategic partnerships, and collaborative learning to support the creation and identification of innovative tools, models, and practices to increase the number of small businesses, create access to job skill development, improve public infrastructure, advance high-growth entrepreneurship, and encourage global competitiveness to strengthen underserved communities and historically excluded citizens. The REI University Center's most recent award focuses on four key pillars of community and economic development that together will build up the resilience, sustainability, and equity within the communities in which it partners. The four pillars include resiliency planning, financial resilience, circular economies, and 21st century communications. The University Center will work with community partners to address these themes in Michigan Economic Development Corporation identified redevelopment ready communities containing opportunity zone census tracts and or large concentrations of ALIS populations, or those who are asset limited, income constrained, employed. I am Emma Gilbert, and I am one of the hosts for Community and University. Today, we will be spotlighting one of REI Center's innovation fellows, Tony Willis, who is working on a project entitled Exploring Communal and Cooperative Investment Models for Lansing, aimed at building financial resilience in the Lansing community. Innovation fellows provide on-the-ground support and coordination to move concepts to actions, implementing new economic development tools, models, and policies. Welcome to the CCED podcast, Tony.
Hey, thank you, Emma, so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So before we begin talking about your project, would you mind providing our listeners with a brief overview of your educational and professional background?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started off at Lansing Community College, did a number of years there, and I transferred to Michigan State University. So I had the full Lansing collegiate experience, I would say. And then from that point, I was able to get to start my career in business banking at MSU Federal Credit Union, which I worked at for a number of years, 5 to 6 years or so. And during that time at the credit union, we were just getting started through business lending, this brand new division. And part of my task was to reach out to different partners and organizations that help support small businesses. And one of those organizations was LEAP, where I met my predecessor, Jeff Smith, at through a pitch competition called The Hatching. And, shortly after that, they had a position open. I applied, and, 2 weeks after applying, I got the role and I started. And I've been at LEAP for over 8 years now in economic development for the greater region. And I have multiple roles within that position, everything from VP of entrepreneurship to corporate innovation, and now as a chief equity development officer. And so that's my pathway further into economic development. And I've been doing a number of projects outside of LEAP as well to help keep me going and curious as well beyond the great work we do at LEAP. So yeah, that's a little overview of me, Emma.
Well, it sounds awesome. I think that provides a good overview of how you got into economic development work. So what key changes have you discovered or observed since you first started working in Lansing beyond your educational experience?
Yeah, so a number of key things. I think, since my time over the last, 8.5 to 9 years at LEAP here, you could see a strong energy of reinvestment in the community taking place. You can also sense, and this is like I said, over the last 8.5 years in this role, I've noticed a number of investments, both public and private, in key areas of the community. LEAP office is located in Rio Town, which is just south of downtown. That area, you know, dramatically changed after both the infrastructure of Streetscape and BWL making it its headquarters located there. And so more businesses grew to support that. And just like the hipster type feel was fully in full swing at that space. But also currently, like over the last year and a half, the Lansing region has been, you know, red hot when it comes to outside investment. And knowing that we're located, we are essentially located throughout the state, so it's a good space when it comes to logistics. Michigan as a whole has great, you know, environmental climate protection. That's one of our assets, being right here in the Midwest and in the north part of the state, and are in the Midwest as well, is that we really don't have that many geographic or environmental disruptions that take place, such as tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, have you. So we have a good safety feeling. But beyond that, our industry and manufacturing has posed as a great resource when it comes to talent. And so corporations, especially looking at in the manufacturing space, see that as a great way to pool all-star talent, knowing that we have a great educated population. And then finally, the cost of living. Lansing still remains to be affordable for a lot of folks to have a great cost, a great lifestyle at not a super high and expensive cost. So those are the key factors that I've seen being leading to some of the changes in the increased investment in our region over the last, 8 years or so.
So it sounds like building up the resilience of the city overall has been part of its chief goals in the past few years. Would you say that that is a correct characterization of what Lansing has been up to?
Yeah, resilience for sure. That is definitely correct. You know, we're trying to make sure that we can best stabilize ourselves for any other upcoming crisis, and that we can be as dependent upon our local infrastructure from when it comes to agriculture, food production, to other types of emergency crises as well as centralized here. And when it comes to developing a talent pool that can meet the needs of our current workforce in the future. So resiliency is a great way to describe what's going on, I would say.
Well, it sounds like your project definitely has some great inroads with the work that's already going on in the city. So let's get more into that. So for your Innovation Fellowship project, can you provide the audience with an overview of what your project is about, the research that you are conducting, and some of the goals that you have in how the project will eventually be implemented?
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to the project for the fellowship here, as you mentioned earlier in the intro, it's all about the communal focus of tools to help build wealth and to help create a more equitable approach for development as a whole. The two aspects that I'm looking into, first being a community investment trust, a CIT, and the second being a worker owner cooperative space. Both of these tools and business models, I believe, can generate access to wealth and access to stability and local control and authority that is rarely seen or not as seen as it should be in the greater economy. And so those are the two areas I'm focusing on to develop those. One of those are completely myself and working with, that's a CIT model on my own here as an individual, working with the local government, the Board of Commissioners, as well as the City of Lansing itself to look at the strategy and the feasibility of that and develop that plan. And then the other one, working in partnership with LEAP, is to further the ability for the worker-owner cooperative and related to succession planning. You know, I think one of the next, this is my personal opinion here for sure, like one of the next financial crises we might see is that when a number of baby boomers that own businesses want to retire, they don't have a succession plan in place. And so they will just start to close down their doors, which is a triple net loss across the board that the community loses because they could, the thriving businesses just closes because the person doesn't want to work it anymore. Employees lose because they don't have a job. And then the business owner has a lost opportunity where they could sell that business and retain, get additional income and have a legacy retained as well. So in those manners, I think the worker owner succession plan will help alleviate that by allowing workers to take ownership of a business and proceed and also increase their income as individuals, owners, and the community wins, so does the owner. So the former owner at that point. So I'm excited about this and the project. And this fellowship allows us to really take, and myself to take an advanced look and commitment to have these things grow and see where they end up over this next 6 months here.
So one of the goals of your project was a community investment trust, if I heard you correctly. Now, can you provide a little bit of a description of what a community investment trust actually is?
Yeah, absolutely. So a community investment trust is a entity, an actual trust, where a organization creates a trust to hold and purchase a property. This property is owned by the trustees, which are individuals who, from certain zip codes, can contribute into the trust through monthly installments, whether that's $10 up to $100 a month. And this allows a community collective, to own a property, a commercial property for that fact. It could be a mixed use, but mostly commercial property. And this ownership benefits the individuals in many ways. So as I mentioned, this is a trust, so they have a group of trustees that will select a management board, and the management board will have authority to make decisions through vote to make sure the properties and maintenance and who they want to have in the property or the lease rates and beyond. So kind of talk about so that's what a community investment trust is. And I want to go to that, come to the benefits, Emma. So for the benefits we see here, and this is a newer concept too. Now, I think there's only been one real, or two, both in the state of Washington, out in the Seattle, greater Seattle metropolis, where these are installed at. But a number of folks have been inquiring about this model in other communities because the local level of ownership, of authority, a number of these commercial properties, especially in Lansing, are owned by folks that don't live here. And so it's kind of like an out of sight, out of mind type of thing, where that the property can be dilapidated at times, or the kind of tenants there are probably not the type of tenant that the community would like to have in their neighborhood. Perhaps, you know, but for the person who's not there, you know, they just look at it as pure revenue and versus the other thoughts that could be associated with having a certain type of establishment in a certain location. So the local ownership and direction is a key part of it. The other part is that this is a way that allows people of different zip codes to have ownership, and that ownership presents a wealth building opportunity. Because as the property value increases, you're paying off the debt service of that property, and that leads to dividends to the individuals who invest in the property. And then also, part of the community investment trust model is that your money is guaranteed because you use the city's credit about this investment. So any person who puts their money in this, their initial investment is guaranteed, so they can pull that out anytime they want or once a year. They can pull out their money back out, and they can also join back in at the next open period as well. So it's a no risk investment for the individual to get this. And it's a high, potential high yield of return and also high yield when it comes to governance of the project.
So since you said the community investment trust model is something that's newer in terms of, you know, just it as a concept itself, but also in its implementation within communities, how or if you've done this work already, how have you understood the community's perspective about this opportunity? Is this something they're looking forward to? Is this something that, you know, specific demographics within Lansing are targeted to benefit from? How have you been able to really leverage this strategy?
Great question. Emma, when it comes to our engagement and seeing the buy-in from this, we were able to talk to a number of community organizations. Myself, really, I said we, it's me on this project, that talked to a number of community organizations representing mostly on like the south side of Lansing, in the southwest side of Lansing. There's a number, there's about three or four different commercial strip mall type properties that I think this type of investment model would be prime to utilize for. Then I hear, so from the feedback we've seen, the main hardship or concern the community has brought up in these meetings with both One Love Global and SEED, the Community Education Economic Development Group, which is like a local organization as well, based in Southwest Lansing. They say that, you know, nobody invests in these properties, or it's hard to talk to the owner when the owner's not there or in that realm. And so there's a collective desire and want to have some type of authority in these properties and to see that investment happen and also help be more attractive to newer businesses and businesses that the community wants. So through conversation of local groups and bodies, how I was to get the interest and their main point of desire for such a program.
That's awesome. So it really sounds like this community investment model is really building off of the needs that you've identified within the community already. And in terms of the second goal of your project, which has to do with cooperative investment models, the Allen Neighborhood Project, which is located in the east side of Lansing, that also uses a cooperative kind of investment model. But how have you understood this concept to wanting to expand this concept rather in other areas within Lansing? Is this something that's also really community driven, or how do you see this kind of expanding beyond a neighborhood center, but to other maybe more mainstream or widely used resources within the city?
Yeah. So yeah, the Allen Neighborhood Center is a phenomenal space. And I'm looking, when originally going into this plan of action for the worker owner business model, it's that I really see that looming possible crisis of the retirement. And then knowing that many regular people outside of business owners don't have wills or succession planning in place, and how crucial a step that is when it comes to like next steps afterwards for whatever you have left after you have transitioned from this, you know, from this plane of existence. And so those type of things are I see as like big opportunities that we can improve upon as a community collectively if we understood, implement models to help shore up the loose ends here. And so the we had a number of local institutions here, Lansing institutions that are restaurants and other businesses that have been around for years, and they closed out during the pandemic. And I think they, you know, and two of them I can say right now, I mentioned one, it's DeLuca's. They weathered the pandemic. It was just the fact that they were looking to retire, and it is the owner, the family, all had different interests in other job opportunities, and they didn't really want to pursue the family business, which has been around for about 50 years and is like a Lansing staple. But he had a potential buyer towards the very end, but that was until after he did an article or interview that said he wants to sell the business or wants to close the business. After he mentioned, hey, I'm looking to close business out in 5 months, then a potential buyer approached him, but that time frame didn't allow enough due diligence to make that deal go through. And so I looked at that as, imagine if, you know, the workforce that worked there at DeLuca's, who've probably been there, and folks and employees have been there for, you know, years on years, that know how to do their job and know how the flow of the business looks like. Imagine if they're able to collectively purchase the business, keep the owner on as a consultant, or help them train to learn the other aspects of the business they're not privy to, whether that's the supply chain or the payroll management software and beyond. And they can actually figure out a way to buy the business, and their individual income would increase, that being owning a profitable business. And they can have revenue sharing as a collective from that. I said that would have been a major win in that space. So seeing the cooperative model in other areas, I know in Ohio there's a few spots that have one's like a dry cleaning business that's been that's run by new Americans or newcomers, also known as refugees to America in the space here, that's been very both profitable but as well as successful. I see that model be something that be replicated in our community in Lansing, very much so. And so those are kind of the breakdowns I'm looking at, and just knowing that these models are not new. They're not as much rare. You know, I think that last MSU REI summit, the Innovate State Summit, we had a speaker about talking about cooperatives in that space. Now there's like over 144,000 throughout the United States. And so they're out there for sure, but I think it's less known and unfortunately less utilized. So I think, but their output could be such a big benefit for the community.
Are there limits to the number of people that can be a part of this kind of cooperative type of investment model? You know, I know you mentioned DeLuca's, which is a restaurant in Lansing, but say other types of service providers or businesses in general wanted to adopt a similar framework, would that be something that is, you know, transmissible to those other types of situations?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think of, you know, manufacturing, whether it's, you know, print or other different type of goods being produced, where, yeah, even those type of realms, they're already understand like both a collective and a group mindset, especially when you look at the union approach, right? Is that there's a collective understanding as a bargaining group, we want this. And so I see this not just applicable to the restaurant or eatery business, but beyond that. And when it comes to the limit of individuals, you know, it goes from the smaller amount of employees, meaning there can be more of a partnership type aspect, and a larger amount definitely goes into the different rights of voting, and then to a board, and then to a managing partner in that space. So, you know, there's a little more complexities, but nothing that can't be done with, you know, a little will and a little effort.
And you also mentioned previously too, that in working on these, setting up these kind of models, you've been working with LEAP, and you've also been working with some individuals on the Board of Commissioners, but what support have you gotten from other local governance structures in order to really make this not only an idea, but a model that can truly be implemented and utilized within the community?
Yeah, so for the worker owner succession planning, Ingham County has saw the vision, and, you know, they have backed this. This is going through their service committee, and it's been approved to move forward with that. So that's a yay and hooray for that. So that's a big win for the worker owner succession planning. I think we're getting close, whether through the city of Lansing or even some local financial institutions I've talked to as well that have dollars that could go to support this through whether, you know, their civic engagement or corporate philanthropy efforts to help support this type of programming. So I've been getting a lot of support. Both the commissioners have been great from Ingham County for sure. So that's been a big win on for me, and both on the LEAP angle and me personally with the CIT space.
Well, that's great that you've had some simultaneous support and that this hasn't been something that, you know, you've identified in the community, but isn't supported politically. So that's also something that's, you know, a barrier to overcome. And that's great that you've already, you know, surmounted that. And moving forward, you know, how do you see, or who do you see this project having the most impact on within Lansing? You know, your project is targeted towards, you know, the Lansing community in general, but are there specific demographics in which you truly see these programs supporting?
Yeah, you know, top of mind are those underrepresented communities that have been unable to really fully participate in all the wealth building activities that can take place in the United States. And that being ownership of businesses and ownership of property have been tied to some of the most effective ways to grow one's overall wealth and net house income collectively. And so those underrepresented groups, specifically BIPOC, Black people, other people of color, those with disabilities and in that realm and beyond, as I said, underserved, that is a core area that I want to see partake in these programs that could benefit from these programs even more so. When it comes to, you know, other ways of, you know, outreach, I think it's there. We have a number of community leaders in those areas that want to be part of this, that are being part of this. So that's where I see the benefit happening in that space. To answer the question all the way, Emma, sorry, I might have kind of took it at a different angle, but I definitely share that for sure.
No, I definitely think that you answered the question, especially in your discussion of, you know, who specifically will benefit, as well as the outreach strategy that you're trying to build. And elaborating on that outreach strategy, is working with community partners that might have more specific ties to these underserved communities part of your plan for this project? Or is that an effort that you plan to take on and moving forward beyond the work that you're doing within the REI Center?
Yeah, so I look at this program being, you know, ongoing. I think we can really get some legs on this program. You know, the worker owner succession planning is definitely is to get implemented this year. It won't be a quick turnaround per se, because after talking to the firm C2BE, you know, there is a, you have to reach out, you have to people that feel comfortable going, the business owner has to feel comfortable going over their books, looking at the perceived value of what that is there, you know, putting a number on it. Have to find the right business or have enough employees that want to partake in buying the business. And so this is, you know, over a year to process, but getting it started, implemented this year, you know, that looks like it's going to happen very clearly on that. The CIT program and then LEAP, sorry, with the Work Owner Cooperative, you know, LEAP, as well as Ingham County will be there to spearhead and move that forward. And, you know, I'm involved in both of those areas that way. For the CIT, you know, the first step is a feasibility study. And that takes about between 6 to 10 weeks, I believe, when it comes to looking at the financials from the organization to help form the trust, looking at properties, demand of the marketplace for certain properties, figuring out roles, legal documents. So it does take some time for feasibility. So I feel like, you know, both these projects have enough support in the community thus far, and which will help drive these things forward beyond the time frame of the fellowship right now, which is great, because we want to see these things, you know, live longer than just the initial engagement and implementation through the support of MSU REI.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely a goal of the REI University Center, and truly seeing not just the, you know, the theory or the research behind it, but also seeing the outcomes that are produced in the communities in which we're partnering. And so just to kind of push this conversation along, I think we've definitely covered a lot about your project itself and the goals of your project. But what truly makes your project innovative?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I think one of the biggest aspects when it comes to innovation is, you know, finding a need and filling a need. And I think we found the need through, it's been longstanding that wealth building has not been, and the tools of wealth building have not always been easily accessible to certain demographics in the community, and certain areas in the community are hurting more than others. And so we know there's a need right there. And then we, you know, what makes it innovative, these are both two models that are less explored and less known. One is completely pretty much almost brand new, really, in the last 5 years. And so that's the CIT model. So I think those both breed innovation in itself, and that it is upon us, and it is, you know, obtainable for us to have an equitable economy and create programs and pathways to help lower poverty, to help increase household income, increase local ownership and authority, and drive a communal collective goal for good. And I think that's what kind of makes up the innovation part of this program.
I think you definitely hit the nail with that one. And so, you know, not just looking at the innovative nature of your project, but also looking at, you know, some of the goals in terms of the pillars of financial resilience that the center has taken on, you know, how does your project further the REI mission, not only in terms of equitable development, but also in building that local financial resilience to stop some of those leakages that you've identified?
Yeah, so majorly, MCREI is definitely a cornerstone institution when it comes to this in the stock process. And so when we think of resilience in the long term, this program really aligns itself to the ability that if a community individuals have more income, you are less susceptible to a unknown or impulsive or catastrophic change that could happen, whether it's the economy, to your jobs, you personally, your household income and the ability to have savings and having assets makes you more resilient. You know, when they talk about long-term wealth outlook for the, you know, for the majority of Americans, and how around 50% of people don't have over, you know, $5,000 saved, about 50% of people don't have the ability or don't have, not the ability, don't have, retirement savings in the space, that puts the community at large in a very treacherous type of state where you're susceptible to a lot of, unknown dangers financially. And that takes a toll on you as a person. That takes a toll on your loved ones. That takes a toll on a lot of communal activities as well. So by creating like this program right here, by really helping create access to assets, access to wealth building, and those are being both commercial real estate and or a business, you know, through the worker owner succession planning, those things allow individuals to seek and grow and become more, less susceptible to change. Or, and by change, I'm talking about like negative change in that space. So that's where I feel like we align ourselves very closely with the resilience that one of the pillars that MSCREI has in store.
Yeah, that's great. I definitely see a lot of comparisons as to how your project truly fits into like the culture and the work that the city is already doing. So it seems like there's a lot of streamlined efforts towards really building that, not just resilience in one aspect of the city, like you previously mentioned, to natural event shocks or natural disaster shocks, but to, you know, changes into our social and economic environments as well, which a lot of people, you know, don't pay attention to maybe as explicitly, but live through every day implicitly, whether that they recognize that experience or not in those terms. So yeah, I welcome your response to that.
No, I was going to say mission. Yeah, I totally agree with what you say there, Emma. And, you know, I look at the worker owner succession plan as a tool that allows, especially for industries that are outside of outside of the retail leg of the supply chain. You know, the majority of businesses are in that retail leg of the supply chain, which is directly dependent upon the consumer. And so when we saw of COVID, the amazing shake up and how it hurt the economy, especially those small businesses, because people lost their jobs and those retail businesses suffered tremendously that are dependent upon just the consumer. And the vast majority of any underrepresented group, whether it's a person of color, woman, veteran, majority of those demographics are situated within the underrepresented, are situated in the retail end of the pipeline. And so if we can have individuals who are in the manufacturing end or the wholesale end of the pipeline think about succession planning and having their workforce, who are typically more diverse than just ownership in those areas, and those that new ownership is more representative of the community at large, we can really see a shift in large scale wealth production, as well as core beliefs in some organizations as well. So that really excites me. So that's why I want to kind of jump in on that.
So I know you mentioned previously the fact that there are some other communities in Washington State that have already implemented that communal investment trust model. But what is the potential, in your opinion, for other communities, not only in Michigan, but potentially across the nation, to implement a similar model, maybe to that community investment trust, but also in cooperative investment models too, which are already a little bit more widely used, but could use more, wide disbursement across communities that don't have access to those opportunities currently.
Yeah, I think the opportunity is very large. I think we can see this being very, replicatable across a number of communities, both of those aspects. And when I talk to CIT Invest, which is like the leading firm for the Community Investment Trust, they're the ones that started the program, and they have their outreach, engagement, and replication officer. And I met with the CEO of the firm as well. He mentioned, this year, since the beginning of this year, they had, I think, 12 engagements for different communities looking at their model. And he mentioned, I forget the number he had last year, but he saw for the first quarter, 12 was like, whoa, it was a giant spike up. So I think the interest is there. And I think, myself and this community of Lansing and MSURI, part of this, we're definitely one of the early adopters that see this as a way that we can really benefit the community at large. And I think furthering the branding and the showing the success of both the CIT as well as the worker owner succession model. Because like you said, the worker owner succession has been around, but probably less known. We can highlight that success, really trumpet it to our peer cities and other communities. And so it worked here, and this is how we did it. And it can work here too. And trust me, we're the first ones to do it. It's been done before. But we're doing it this way, this equitable approach for these demographics specifically, go for it. We can help you along the way. So I think there's a large opportunity for us to show the way and lead the way to a number of other communities to do these type of programs.
That's awesome. And in terms of, the tools and partnerships that you have leveraged in trying to mobilize these strategies, what advice would you give to other communities looking to implement similar models? What tools or partnerships or, just overall advice would you provide them?
Yeah, I have the benefit of both, being an economic development professional in this space, but I say working with both your local EDO, your economic development organization, is a great way to start, as well as community-led organizations, understanding their needs, and this thing where they see like, hey, especially when it comes to wealth generation, that would be a big one there. And we've done that, I've done that on my behalf here. And then your local elected official, I think, you know, on the local level, whether that's county or city, probably the best bet to go, having that relationship. I have a strong partnership with a commissioner here that has been a great ally and supporter of both these programs. And they see the vision, they see the need, they have their finger on the pulse of the community as well. So I think that's imperative because, you know, especially looking at dollars. And, you know, then I would also tell folks, you know, local banks and credit unions, see what they have like a mandate to, you know, to do funding or to do philanthropic giving in different communities. That might be a go ahead as well. You know, locally here, one of our larger bank institutions has, you know, contributed a lot. And I think they might want to contribute to help pay for that feasibility study for the CIT model. And so those are some ways I think, you know, other community individuals or other individuals in their communities could take and, you know, utilize to help create a program like this in their community or other programs. So the EDOs, the local political elected officials, I think definitely in the county and the the city level, and then a community-based organization to have that through, you know, the further outreach of the community that you're trying to serve.
I think that's a great overview. Definitely building relationships is a core part of community and economic investment work anyways. So that definitely makes sense with the trend of the work in this environment. But is there really anything else that you would like to discuss about your research or other opportunities for local financial resilience building?
Yeah, you know, I think we did a great job covering it. I just really want to say that we as a community, as every community really, this has to be on the forefront of our minds that, you know, the time is upon us to really think about what the future holds. And we have to be serious that there are some a number of demographics, a number of areas that probably need a lot of emergency attention. And we want to see these areas grow and thrive. We got to be bold and direct about the support we're giving them. And, you know, also thoughtful for sure, but we have to be willing to take those educated risks to move a program forward, do good for the whole. And, you know, trying beats not trying any day. Trying allows you to say there's room for improvement, not trying just lets the problem grow. And so what we're doing right now, this project is definitely trying to build and grow the wealth and support for certain communities. And I know we'll continue to grow and improve as it grows through, but I think as a whole, just try, go for it, be bold and be direct about the plans and initiatives to help certain communities, to help certain areas of the communities out, which we know those exist throughout every municipal area, community, city, throughout the nation. So that's just my like partaking words about building resiliency in that space, Emma.
I think that that's a wonderful way to recap and also kind of leave our listeners with something to think about in their own work. So with that, I would really truly like to thank you for joining us today, Tony. We look forward to the completion of your research.
I appreciate you, Emma, for this conversation. And I look forward to talking to you soon and can't wait to, you know, have another follow-up as this further in the summer here.
Well, this has been Community and University with Tony Willis discussing his project, exploring communal and cooperative investment models for Lansing in order to build resilience in the Lansing community. Tune in next time for another interview with an REI project leader. Thank you.